This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Dang straight. Well, not this. I mean, this is live. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday. Good to be with you today. Matt and Patrick here today. Patrick, guess who gets to gloat about his Cincinnati Bengals a little bit later on this hour?
I'll let you introduce our upcoming guest.
Cliff Schechter, of course, and who's a Yankees fan, but I don't believe he is also. He's a fan of the local Cincinnati squad. That was a nice win. I didn't watch any of the games. I'll explain why in a second, but I didn't watch any of it. I saw the highlights, which the NFL does a really nice about 10-minute highlight package. Trust me, that is the best way to watch a football game because you get rid of all the commercials. It's not 3 hours. It's 10 minutes. You see every big play done.
Brett brought up the similarities. Some people will probably punch me for this. He brought up the 98 Vikings. It was a game like that that got out to a huge lead and just kind of let it slip away.
Oh, Kansas City Chiefs. Well, you know, boy, you guys were sure acting all week long like this was pre-adorned history. I got news for you. That doesn't work that way. I'm glad it's not going to be the Bengals versus the 49ers. We've had that Super Bowl twice already, believe it or not, which is just really weird if you think about it. Bengals-Rams in 2 weeks, a little less than 2 weeks. And it will be during the Super Bowl. But reminder, Super Bowl will be during the Olympics. The Olympics is in Beijing, so nothing. Maybe some first thing in the morning stuff, but it's almost perfect for the Olympics because they'll completely avoid most of the Super Bowl broadcast.
Yep, and it's being billed as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to have the Super Bowl and the Winter Olympics at the same time.
Well, now that the Olympics are a week later, won't this won't this happen all the time, though, whenever the Olympics happens?
Oh, we'll have to see, because the Olympics don't follow a set schedule. It depends on where they are and where they think the best time to have it is. I'm not even sure where the next Winter Olympics are. I'd have to look that up.
I don't think it's going to be in Beijing. They've had to manufacture every piece of snow they're going to have to use out there.
Well, that was my concern about that was, I'm like, it's probably not going to be any natural snow cover. They're going to have like the big machine like you see down at Buck Hill. Snow may cover roadway when flashing.
Well, it's going to be ice sheets. That's all it's going to be. That will be interesting. So that we did that this weekend. Two things. Well, a few things. Got on out Starling Lake Park down in Eden Prairie. Did a nice little hike down there. Had got some good quality time with the family. I went to Spider-Man: No Way Home yesterday. Finally, I went to a movie theater. There was about maybe 20 people at the first showing in the morning on the Sunday. Piece of cake. That's a pretty entertaining film. And it's interesting. There are people, and this happens every time there's one of these new ones, new Marvel films. It's the best Marvel film ever. No, it's a little off Ragnarok. Okay. Ragnarok, Jeff Goldblum makes Ragnarok number one just alone. That was just, mwah, mwah. Oh, God, just Ragnarok is just too perfect. But it was very entertaining. I don't want to ruin anything. I think the smart thing they did is they have a whole bunch of villains in that one, but as opposed to try to unveil a whole bunch of brand new villains playing the same characters that they've been playing in the past, they brought back a lot of them from the old movies, but not just the movies with who's the guy that does this, the young cat that's the current Spider-Man, Tom Holland. Not with Holland, but the ones with Andrew Garfield and the ones with Tobey Maguire. Or not Tobey Maguire. Who was that guy that did the first one?
That was Tobey Maguire.
Oh, was it Tobey Maguire? Okay. I think of Jerry Maguire. That's a different movie. Anyway, not nearly as many superheroes. That movie would have been a lot better with superheroes, if you ask me. I mean, just Jerry Maguire, superhero sports agent. That would have been phenomenal. But no. Anyway, but no. Very entertaining. And then yesterday, we're Minnesota. Come on, people. Get out there. It's the Winter Carnival. I was over at Winter Rice Park. Saw the ice sculptures. Do you get out there every year? Try to get out there?
I was actually in downtown St. Paul on Saturday. I do have a little winter carnival related. So I was doing a hockey game at the Trio Rink on Saturday afternoon. And so I'm headed up West 7th. I just got through before they shut down the street for the parade.
Oh, okay. Well, good for you. Did you get down to Rice Park or anything to see the ice sculptures?
I did not. I had another thing to get to after the hockey game. But, you know, I saw a lot of people down there. It looked like a good time.
My bit of advice about the Winter Carnival, because it goes on through next week, the earlier the better, because you get a few warm days and all of a sudden the ice sculptures are just not nearly as nice. They're just not. Did that, then went over to the snow sculptures at the State Fairgrounds. That was also great. Matt, also, here, you want another great tip for you? Go do this during the AFC-NFC Championship games. No one is there. It is brilliant. Oh, get a park right next to the exhibits, walk right over. I mean, I parked on the street on Rice Park. I parked right across the way from the ice sculptures, right there, right by where the radio station used to have their booth out at the State Fair, right there. Perfect. Just absolutely perfect. And a great time out there. I ran into Klondike Kate, and I got to tell you, I'm in love. I am. Klondike Kate is just, oh, what an awesome human being. Oh, and just, yes, put me in my place, Klondike. Kate. KK. You can put me in my place. I love that. So, I had a good time. Go out and check that out. It's always good fun. Next weekend, not only do you have the Winter Carnival, get the Lopet, too, going on all over in Minneapolis. So I'm going to go out for that, do that stuff. You got to go out. You got to go out and do this stuff in winter. You can't just stay inside. You got to get out in there and do it. And, you know, between the Kite Festival, the Art Shanties, Winter Carnival, Lopet, we got you covered. It starts getting a little damp after a while, though. You know, you can't really, you know, really got to hope to get wrapped up this stuff by late February, or else you're asking for kind of trouble. 952-946-6205. So, a full show for you today, but I want to start off with revelations. This is from the testimony of the federal trial of three former Minneapolis police officers. Now, tomorrow, Jack Rice is going to join us. We'll talk to him. He's on Court TV today, so I got Trump, man. Needless to say, and he should have. Oh, dear God. Do you think? No, Jack, you go do that. I'm with, heck, can I just, I was just going to maybe sit and watch Jack do that all show. But I've been told I've got contractual obligations. Thanks, boss. But, no, we have Jack coming in tomorrow. These three officers are putting forward what I actually think is a defense that's going to get them off the hook. And that is that the Minneapolis police clearly did not train these people. And it's pretty clear they haven't been training people correctly for decades. Decades. They haven't been training people correctly. The Minneapolis Police Department instructed officers to ignore, a watchdog report published by the city's Civil Rights Division in 2018. Now, that's important. 2018, remember that. That found several cases of police inappropriately asking paramedics to sedate uncooperative people during emergency calls, according to court testimony from the police department's former training commander. So the police told the training commanders to ignore the watchdog report saying you're violating people's civil rights. Wow. At the federal trial of three former Minneapolis police officers, a defense attorney asked Minneapolis Police Inspector Katie Blackwell about a PowerPoint slideshow on excited delirium, a controversial diagnosis that usually refers to a person experiencing a potential fatal state of agitation. A training slideshow cited a draft report by the Minneapolis Office of the Police Conduct Review critical of police asking paramedics to sedate people. But a footnote on slideshow dismissed the findings as a reckless use of antidotes that will prevent the saving of lives. Wow. What you train these officers is this draft report is wrong and uninformed, asked Robert Paul, the attorney for the former officer, Totao. Yes, replied Blackwell. Blackwell said one of the medical professionals leads the training in the unexcited delirium, but that she and former Chief Arredondo had reviewed and approved the slideshow. Once again, Arredondo, we had Chief Arredondo Day. Oh, boy. And he told them to ignore this report. Wow. 6 days into the trial, the police department's past training on excited delirium has become a central point of the defense's argument. Blackwell told juries last week that former officers Tao, Thomas Lane, and Alexander King defied their training when they helped restrain George Floyd on May 25th, 2020, and Tao and King failed to duty to intervene when Floyd became unresponsive. But on cross-examination, Paul showed several slides of the department's excited delirium training, which included video and photo images of officers pinning down suspects with their knees, similar to how Officer Derek Chauvin detained Floyd. Last week, Paul pointed out many of the symptoms Floyd exhibited that day matched training on excited delirium symptoms. Excited delirium has become an increasingly controversial diagnosis in recent years, as some medical and human rights officials have questioned whether it's overused to justify the deaths in police custody, sometimes involving use of their taser. The American Medical Association has publicly opposed this diagnosis. But hey, guess what? Minneapolis police overruled the American Medical Association and said, hey, just ignore that. You keep training that. I don't know if they actually said it like that, but it's clear they were ignoring it. In a statement Monday, Minneapolis police spokesperson Garrett Parton said the training no longer uses the term excited delirium in accordance with the American Medical Association statement last year. The most recent fall 2021 training delivered to all department members by the physician did not include the term excited delirium. Did they call it, was it excited delirium? Was that what you called it? I'm just asking. Minneapolis Police Department training emphasizes identifying altered mental status as potentially serious medical emergency and obtaining EMS assistance as soon as possible. The planning to provide updated training to all MPD officers without the use of the term began shortly after the AMA's adoption of the policy. Now, I want to go back to the very beginning of the story. A watchdog report published by the city's Civil Rights Division in 2018 found that police were inappropriately asking paramedics to sedate uncooperative people because of excited delirium. 2018, they were told by the city's Civil Rights Division. This was a draft of the report by the Minneapolis Office of Police Conduct Review, critical of police asking paramedics to sedate people. In 2018, the official spokesperson for the Minneapolis Police Department says they, as of last year, no longer uses the term excited delirium. That would be 3 years after the initial report. 3 years. The most recent fall 2021 training delivered to all department members by the physician did not include the term excited delirium. I can just see these guys patting themselves on the back saying, see, we did this right. Okay, let's run the timeline, shall we? 2018, you were told to stop this by the Civil Rights Department because this was wrong. 2020, May of 2020, you killed George Floyd in the middle of the street. And now, as testimony is happening in 2022, you're saying, hey, don't worry. We've stopped training people inappropriately and wrongly, even against the advice of our own city departments. And we started doing it not in 2018, when this all broke down that we probably shouldn't be doing this anymore. Not in 2020, when we murdered George Floyd in the streets. No. We started it last year, in fall of last year. Aren't we good? Jesus. I'm going to do my same thing. Most police officers are fantastic. Most police officers are good. But if anyone wants to look at me and try to argue the point that the Minneapolis Police Department is not an absolute disgrace, I will argue that. I mean, my God. This is just the latest example. How about all those guys that were out there on the Stallings tape shooting rounds at innocent civilians, not announcing who they were, opening fire on it with a chest shot on an innocent person just standing in a parking lot, defending the one guy who was the officer that was out there intent on defending the honor and dignity of white supremacists? Jesus. And here you are. Here is court testimony today in this trial saying from these three officers who are saying, hey, it's not our fault. The city of Minneapolis, the police department of Minneapolis, doesn't train their officers for crap. And even when they are advised, boy, you should change this training practice, they intentionally continue to do the wrong practice. Holy God. There is a decent chance these three officers will be found not guilty because this is actually a legitimate defense. They weren't trained. Chauvin's there at the site. And once again, Chauvin has been convicted. He is in jail. But he was clearly the lead of these four guys. And if these guys weren't trained and didn't have the okay to yank Chauvin off of him, well, who's really at fault here? And here's the crime. And this is what we said last November, the day after the ballot initiative failed. You'd better fix this mess. You'd better start doing some things that are going to show the people of Minneapolis you're trying really hard to become a better police department. It would seem to me this new training on excited delirium only kicked into gear when you guys were under the gun of a ballot initiative to basically dismantle your entire police department. And it was then and only then did you start doing the thing you were told to do in 2018. You guys suck at this. You guys are bad. And it's clear the entire thing. And folks, I'm going to say this without a doubt in my mind. At least the impression I have gotten is this all begins and ends with the police union, is that the union is the one that's basically dictating who does get – why hasn't anyone from the Stallings tape been arrested for what they did? Because the police union has basically created a situation where you can't hold police officers accountable unless they murder someone on camera in the streets. And it doesn't seem like the police department itself has any intention of going against those rules on whether they're written or unwritten. We had that story from Rolling Stone magazine where the one woman who was trying to become a police officer, I think it was actually the same woman that was quoted in the story, was basically told that you need to go out there and start beating on a black man in the streets to be one of us. This is a mess. And right now, Mayor Fry, let me make sure you understand this. And whoever's in charge of that police union, whoever's in charge of that police department, let me make sure you understand something. Unless you clowns stop dancing around this and taking the advice from 2018 and finally and only finally putting that advice into actual play in 2021 when it's you're under the gun because there's a police dismantling ballot initiative that you are trying to fight, that doesn't show me you have any intent on fixing these problems. And if you do not fix these problems, there will be another ballot initiative. And eventually, they're going to win. Because right now, I don't see anything that tells me anyone's trying to clean up this mess in that police department outside of getting rid of anyone who is critical of what the hell is going on over there. These guys are going to walk. These guys are going to walk because the argument is Minneapolis Police Department just can't train their officers. And really, how can you argue against that point? How can you argue? They created this mess because of their horrific standards within that department. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. Cliff Schechter here in about 12 minutes. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. This is just the latest example that the police department, whether that's the police department itself or the union, is just not serious about oversight. And as a matter of fact, I mean, just when you look at this story here that was put out from the trial today, one of the things, like I said, it was written on the slide that, you know, that this was, to ignore this. Cited a draft report by the Minneapolis City Police asking paramedics to sedate people, but a footnote on the slideshow dismissed the findings as a reckless use of antidotes that will prevent the saving of lives. You know, and isn't that always the thing, is that whenever these guys get called on out, let's go to the Kim Potter trial with the murder of Dante Wright. What's the thing that they come on out is like, sure, we got a video camera of her basically saying taser, 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 and pulled out her gun and killed the guy. But thank God she did. My God, he was about to build a nuclear device and he was going to blow up the entire Oh, she saved millions. You know, tragic accident and all, but thank God she did what she did. I mean, that's kind of their argument. I mean, I'm exaggerating, but not by much. But not by much. Let's go back to Bob Kroll and the letter he released after George Floyd was murdered, saying that that Derek Chauvin was an absolutely outstanding police officer who deserved his job back. And not only that, but went out of their way to vilify people. And the reality is this, in the world we live in today, people want the narrative validation. And so if you wanted George Floyd to be guilty, the police department coming on out there and saying, oh, he was a druggie, he was a gangbanger, oh my God, counterfeit money. He was going to murder 50 people that night. And they, and the people that will blindly, you know, defend the police will sit there and say, yeah, that was the case. They were saving lives when they murdered him. That's what their argument will be. Well, isn't that the same exact damn thing here? Will prevent the saving of his lives because you paint yourself as so noble and honest, don't you? You guys are a clown car. I mean, it is. I mean, that, and trust me, I have talked to police officers off the record who have said, oh my God, is the Minneapolis Police Department an embarrassment? I have talked to people from not only in the metro area, suburbs, people from St. Paul. I have talked to people in outlying districts as well, in outstate Minnesota, who will say, oh my God, I can't believe that they're pulling that crap in that city. They get caught. I mean, let's go back to Pointergate with Delmonico. Remember him with the union guy? And he's sitting there, why are you making a deal out of this? Because she's getting cops killed because she pointed with someone while she was canvassing for voters. It's just stupid beyond stupid beyond stupid. And they're always, their justification is, well, we saved lives. Not because they did, but that's the crap sandwich they force feed the public to justify their incompetent and inexcusable behavior. It's just a shame. But you know what? And like I said, everyone deserves their day in court. And these officers, it would be interesting. And we talked about this during the Derek Chauvin trial. If Chauvin would have actually come on out and threw the department under the bus, he might not have been found guilty. These officers are. And at the end of the day, I mean, the Minneapolis Police Department looks like an incompetent group of boobs. Not because they're being falsely portrayed by that like that, but because they seem to surely be that way. It's been, what, a year and 8 months since Stallings? How come no one has been held accountable for that? We've got video. You've all seen it. How come no one has been held accountable? Oh, that's right. You're waiting for people to either transfer to a different apartment or retire so that you don't really have to. Oh, we wagged our stern wagon finger. Oh, we wagged it at them. They learned a lesson. No, they didn't. It's about covering up the crap actions of bad cops. And Minneapolis, St. Paul, that's about the only damn training you guys seem to be doing over there. Or not in St. Paul. Forgive me, St. Paul, I shouldn't put it that way. Minneapolis Police Department. That's what you seem to be doing over there. Ta-da. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. Cliff Schechter when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Cliff, 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 Cliff.
AM 950, the progressive Cliff. Voice of Minnesota. I will never get tired of that. Cliff Schechter is, of course, a national pundit kind enough to join us. Unprecedented is the podcast. You can hear that at Patreon. Also, Blue Amp Strategies, he's a master of messaging. If you've got a campaign that's looking for some messaging help, Cliff Schechter is the one to help you out with that. And he's coming to us rosy-cheeked from the city of Cincinnati, soon to be in the latest Super Bowl versus the L.A. Rams. Hi, Cliff. Hello. Oh, there you go. Are you excited? Don't do the New Orleans Saints thing. No.
They're who dad. We're who day, man. We were there first. I mean, you know what it's like. You're in a medium-sized Midwestern city, right?
Wait a minute. Did you just say, I know what it's like to go to a championship series in Minneapolis, St. Paul?
Listen, buddy. You gotta let me finish because you've been to one. What, you guys won in 1991? The last time anybody went to a championship series here on the professional level, much less won, was 1990. Yeah. So you're even more recent than us. So my point to you is, it's not like an East Coast city that has a gazillion teams, which I'm from, New York, where, you know, there's a different team every couple of years in the championship. Like, it's a huge deal here. So everybody is so excited. And come on, the Bengals were just
They're great. They've been great this year. Oh, they've been fantastic.
They're incredible. But it reminds me of, like, you know, when you have a franchise that's just awful and you expect they will screw everything up every year, which I think you could go back and try and say that was the New England Patriots, wasn't it? Tom Brady came along.
I could give you the Wild. I could give you the T-Wolves. I could give you the current Twins roster.
Well, point being, like, that's been the Bengals' entire existence in this thing. And, like, you just expect they could be winning by 30 points and finally to lose with 3 minutes left, which they kind of did with Pittsburgh, like, 5 or 6 years ago. So my wife told me, never believe, don't fall for it. And, like, then this team comes along, and you've got Burrow and McPherson, these guys that are just scared of nothing. And you kind of feel like maybe they're killing that curse because they're so confident. They never feel like they're out of a game. Like, it's incredible. So, actually, it's a lot of fun to be a part of.
I will, for the record here, let me say, we have, of course, won a few WNBA championships. The Minnesota Lynx have actually had some very good teams there. And although it doesn't resonate across the country, the Minnesota Gopher Hockey Squad, they won the collegiate championship a few times. But no, it's been a while since we've been there. And boy, oh boy, that Vikings teams. I want to say this for the record. I want you to win. I really do. I think that of the two teams, I'm going to be rooting for the Bengals. Not necessarily because I don't like the LA Rams. I kind of like the LA Rams. This is actually going to be a mildly enjoyable Super Bowl. Two teams I can enjoy watching being there.
All right. Nobody predicted either of these. You're not getting the same old people again. You're not getting Mr. Anti-Vax there. That was fun seeing him. So, like, it's like something new. It's something different and interesting. These two, you know, not to say the Rams, they've been there. I'm not saying they haven't, but they haven't been like a great team historically, and the Bengals have been an awful team historically, and no one would have ever bet that these two teams. I wonder what those odds were if you bet these two teams would end up in the Super Bowl. You probably could have bet like a buck at the beginning of the season. You'd be rich now. So, you know.
I know. And
you had me here to talk about politics.
Yeah, well, tell you what. I'll have you on. Let's see what your schedule looks like on the Friday before the Super Bowl, okay?
That sounds awesome.
All right.
Come on, and we will chat. We'll chat. I may be writing a piece for the Daily Beast on the symbolism of the Bengals coming back. So we'll see.
Outstanding. All right. So I want to bring up something here. New York Times ran the editorial this weekend, which basically said one Gallup poll says Democrats are doomed. So everyone, don't even go vote. You're all over and all these things. I've watched the media. I mean, I made the point. I said we have the best economy since 1984, more manufacturing jobs in 1 year than Trump got in four. We are the party of health care in the age of the pandemic. They are the party of anti-vaxxers that Trump still won in 2020. And the 1-6 insurrectionists are actually wholesome American people. The reality is we should be mopping the floor with them. And I think that there is – one of the reasons I'm having you on today is because there is this clearly a concerted effort to discourage the Democrats and get them to stay home. And the reality is we need to make sure everyone understands what is going to happen on the national level and on local and state levels if the Republicans sweep through and get into office in 2022.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, you had a friend of mine, he was a client of mine, and, you know, David Pepper,
yeah,
on, who wrote a book on you're using Ohio as an example. This is already happening in many state levels where we literally just we don't have democracy anymore. If you take any poll of what the majority of people feel like in this state, that is about 53, maybe 54% red, 46%, 47% blue. They've got a super majority in the House. It's a joke. Like, there's nothing resembling democracy here. And that will only get worse if people don't turn out, you know? And as you just said, I mean, look, they've said what they're going to do. I mean, mm-hmm. if they take a House back, they're going to shut down the January 6th committee. I mean, more evidence comes out all the time that Trump likely knew and coordinated all of this. We're getting closer and closer to being able to prove that. They're going to shut that down. They're going to impeach Biden immediately. They said that too. And they'll have the votes to do it because they've got there's at this point, you know, if you think about who the House, you know, who's in the House there and the kinds of nuts that would join them if they have a big year in 22, like, you know, 147 of them, or was it 137 in the House, voted to decertify our election and essentially overthrow our democracy. Mm-hmm. What do you think is going to happen? What do we all think is going to happen if they elect a lot more people just like those guys and gals?
Well,
like they're gonna it's gonna become this. I'll just say quickly, it's gonna become this thing where it doesn't really. I mean, they've already shown they don't care about policy and all of that, but now we're gonna get to the point where they don't care to the point of like they'll just impeach anybody for being a Democrat.
Well, and that's where we're getting. And I want to point out, as you bring up all that stuff, Trump himself is already working with House members that if they take over the House of Representatives, they're not only going to shut down the 1-6 Commission as investigating the people that were actually behind 1-6, but they're going to create a kangaroo court there to basically accuse the FBI and Nancy Pelosi themselves and Democrats of being the real people behind the 1-6 and holding them accountable with jail signs. I mean, they've already basically it's turning into a kangaroo court. It's not just whether or not we're going to have accountability for 1-6. It's that they're actually saying, oh, well, we're knowingly going to arrest and jail people who had nothing to do with it as a way to cover Trump and continue the lie that his legacy was great.
Right, and to continue to lie that he won an election where he got his butt handed to him.
Yeah,
you know, by any measure. And one in which they found enough ways already to try to suppress votes, or when it had been as close as it was, they've been perfecting that ever since the Supreme Court versus Shelby versus Alabama, and they got rid of the Voting Rights Act. I mean, yeah, you're exactly right about that. And I think, you know, this is where Democrats are at fault. I've said this is that our people need to stop being nice. They need to stop sort of assuming that good wins out over evil. I don't know how much evidence they need of all this. We need to start aggressively messaging all of this, because in the end, if people aren't going to choose us for straightforward reasons that elections are normally about, then you've got to make it a choice for people. Do you want to still have a democracy? Do you want to have kangaroo courts? Do you want people who have told you they're going to come in and spend their time throwing people in jail, investigating the FBI, attacking, you know, our various agencies and government? Do you want that and telling people who these people are who are saying these things? You know, it's Mrs. Jewish Lasers herself and Matt Gaetz, the sex trafficker. And I mean, these are the people we're talking about here.
Yeah.
You know, so let's start with like that argument needs to be made. But then the economy. I mean, again, the reason why the Democrats need to be more aggressive is we've got a right wing media that literally is fascist and lies like it breathes. And we've got a mainstream media, which you're putting on that New York Times thing, like, they just can't seem to help themselves. Yeah. They just can't seem to realize what their role is in a democracy, what their purpose is at all. I mean, this has been getting worse for years. It's been happening where the reason Republicans lie so much, the reason they cheat so much, the reason they do all this is because they know there aren't consequences a lot of the time, if ever. Because they know, you know, that the mainstream media will just do a he said, she said. Oh, well, they are against getting vaccinated. You're for it. That's equal. As if people against getting vaccinated aren't all dying at like whatever the rate is. Was it 5 times, 10 times? I mean, these aren't opinions. Opinions are, I think taxes should be higher or lower. Whether sickness kills you is not an opinion. It's science. And like, they won't do their job there. They won't do their job on the coup. They won't, so we have to just get together and force them to.
Well, and it's, but go ahead.
No, I'm just saying by forcing content out there that tells the truth, by creating controversy, because that seems to be the only damn thing they'll cover, by doing all these things that we need to do. We don't want to become the Republicans, but we have to fight as hard and fight as dirty, quite frankly, for the truth as they do for lies and fascism.
By the way, when we bring up media, how about the Huffington Post, which can't help but put out, you know, Democratic doom scrolls on, I mean, this supposedly the left-leaning media who basically is like, Democrats should just quit now. I mean, that's kind of like half the damn stories on Huffington Post. And it's like, I get that that's what gets them clicks, but that's not, you know, disguising the truth as conflict is not getting us anywhere. I think one of the other things that's incredibly important to do is you and I can talk about Trump and 1-6 and investigations. Let's just talk about what the agenda would be. The real agenda the Republicans are desperately trying to keep hidden from before the election because they don't want people knowing what they're going to do. That, you know, choice will be gone. That there won't
limited
be choice.
Eliminate the minimum wage.
A minimum wage. You know? Get rid of public schools. Let's talk about that. How they basically they can't stand the idea of public schools. That's taxpayer dollars. They want to get in the hands of a few handful of charter school executives. They, you know, we can talk about voting rights. I mean, they're going to. I mean, my God, if the Republicans win in 2022. You are going to see purges of voting rolls to where it's almost going to be impossible for Democrats to win in certain states anymore, if not actually by design impossible for them to win. And so, I mean, it's a full agenda that we know is coming, but God, we just can't have the same mentality as we had in 2016.
Or any other time.
Yes.
And again, like, you know, like I get it that we've said in the past, oh, this is the most important election of your lifetime. It turns out some of those actually were in our lifetime so far, because look what it got us. But at this point, I mean, we need to talk to people very clearly about what is going to happen to you. You know, you who got checks mailed to you, like many of us did, stimulus checks and whatever. Yeah, now they're going to be taking that money, as you said, now they'll be coming to collect that from you.
Oh, yeah.
Now what they're going to be doing is they're going to be persecuting you because of who you are. Now they're going to be finding ways to throw you in prison because of who you are. Now they're going to be, opening up the spigot of wealth in our elections. It may dwarf what it looks like right now to that point, you know, where God knows how much Koch brothers types are dumping in because they find a way to pass even more loopholes. I mean, yeah, this is all stuff that they've talked about openly.
Mm-hmm.
They're not hiding it, even as you said. I mean, there are a bunch of them that don't believe the minimum wage is constitutional. They don't believe Social Security is constitutional. They hide that one and try to get elderly voters to stick with them until the very end. They don't believe Medicare. They don't think the government should be allowed to get involved in anything, except for war, of course, and buying stuff from whatever companies they have stock in or own.
But actually, let me make sure. I actually – one thing I will disagree with you on there just really quick is – actually, they'll use that Supreme Court to force their way on others, just like the Supreme Court back in the 1850s did with the Dred Scott case, where they basically said, well, even though you guys are a non-slavery state, you have to respect slavery when someone from a slavery state comes into your state. Well, that basically made slavery legal everywhere. That's what they'll do is they'll come on back, and in the argument that they're going to argue about getting rid of Roe v. Wade is that states have the rights to do this, but then immediately rule that the federal government can overrule the states and make – you know, abortion illegal and choice illegal across the country. That's what they mean. I mean, they are going to abuse the Supreme Court to pass federal laws that basically push their policies even further.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you're disagreeing with me there.
Not at all.
The things they're going to get rid of. Yeah, the things they're going to get rid of are the things that are about humanity and equality and these other principles that exist in our Constitution. Those are the things they're going to get rid of. But no, they're going to – I mean, you can already see – it's not like it's going to be a libertarian effort. Like, we're just let everything go. No, if you're a company that has liberal values, they've proven they've already come out against these companies, right? They'll persecute you. Right? If you're a nonprofit that has liberal values, they'll persecute you. They'll, as you said, they're not going to just say, oh, Roe versus Wade is gone. We'll leave it up to the states. They'll go after California, New York, and other states that will keep abortion rights legal. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They'll go after states that don't want to have guns everywhere. They'll force them on you. They don't believe in anything they say they believe in. They don't believe in federalism. They don't believe in family values. They believe in nothing. They believe in power.
They're paid to push an agenda.
They're just a party about raw power and greed at this point. They've been taken over by all the evils of the very evils that took over conservative parties and turned them into, you know, nationalistic parties in the past in other countries. They're about nothing.
I like
now, except for whatever it is they want to do.
I like how you said it. It's like this. We have to. Every election is the most important election of your life, because if you do like 2010 or do like 2016 and sit back and say, well, I voted last time, I'm not going to do it. Or you believe the narrative that's pushed on you that it's better for Democrats not to vote than to vote, then basically you're going to get screwed, because right now the Republicans are on the cusp. They're on the lip of being able to do all the stuff they've always wanted to do. And if this election goes their way, there is no coming back. I just cannot foresee. As a matter of fact, I would be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if there was an effort to basically remove Biden from office and put Trump in there.
Oh, I wouldn't at all. I mean, I would say that we will not, you know, we had the beginnings of an equal society during Reconstruction, and they ripped it up by its roots and removed it. Black elected officials in the 1870s and 80s, and when they came back with a hammer after we left the South to undo all of that, we didn't see anything close to that kind of progress for another 80 years. You and I, during our lifetimes, will not see anything close to even where we are right now. I mean, this is not hyperbole. This is like looking at history, because what they're going to do is they're going to so consolidate power, which they've already done to a large degree, gerrymandering and stacking the courts, stealing picks and all that sort of stuff. And money and politics and right-wing media propaganda and all that. They're just going to push all of that further, not much further. And as you said, they're going to continually purge the voting rolls. There'll be no way. We'll be one of these places that has elections, but it doesn't matter. And yeah, you'll elect some Democrats, but you'll never get a majority. I mean, no. That's what you're looking at. Well, and you'll lose everything that you care about. So you can be pissed at Joe Biden because you think, oh, I don't think he handled this well or that well, the way he may have been pissed at Obama in 2014 or Bill Clinton in 1994 or whatever. But every one of those times that you stay home and you don't come out, our country just gets a little bit worse, quite frankly, and they take a little more control.
I think, you know, as we wrap up here, one thing I think we should make sure is it's not, I mean, this is January. We're not going to doom hate here. What we're trying to do is tell you, make sure you're registered and make sure everyone you freaking know is registered and they know where to vote, especially in these red states.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't doom unless you choose to make it doom. Mm-hmm. Like, we're giving people a choice, which is a choice I think Democrats and everybody should give them and make it very clear. There are more of us than that. There's a reason they only have won one electoral college and barely at that since 1988, right? Mm-hmm. There's a reason they're gerrymandering all these places, because they're scared of real elections because they know they'll lose. Because even in states that lean a little bit to the right, like Ohio or Missouri or whatever, if there's an honest accounting of what they truly believe, they'll lose in most places. They know that. So that's why they're doing this. And so if people turn out, there will be no doom. We'll do what happened in 1998 when they tried to kick Bill Clinton out of office for, yes, terrible behavior, but no, not something that was impeachable. And they tried to do it because they, in the same way as right now, because they lost at the ballot box, they wanted to get rid of him by different means. And Democrats got together, struck back, and what did we do in 1998 in that midterm? We gained seats.
Yeah.
That's what this needs to be. This needs to be that same response, because, again, if they take over the House, I mean, again, we may not see anything close to democracy in our lifetimes. It really may not.
It will be gone. So get registered. Make sure you're voting. A week from Friday, you're coming back here, so we can be all Bengals all the show. Okay.
We can take that one time to at least be a little bit happy. Talk about something a little bit nicer.
I'm going to get J. Elvis Weinstein. You know, if the guy who used to be with MST3K, he's out in L.A. Yeah. He's out in L.A. I bet you he's a Rams fan. I'm going to get both of you on that show on a week from Friday. Okay.
Don't make me have to do to him what I'm going to have to do to him. I'm just telling you right now. Why don't you get Corbett on there, too?
Oh, well, he's
listening. He may be even listening. Hi, Bill, if you are. Me and Bill have been talking lately. Get Bill out here. Maybe he'll come down on my side.
I don't know.
As a Midwesterner.
Is Riff Trax's own Bill Corbett an L.A. Rams fan? If he is, I'll bring him on. We'll have detente. Oh. We'll have detente on my show on the Friday before Super Bowl.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Oh, man.
Unprecedented is the podcast. You can find it at Patreon. Also, Blue Amp Strategies. I'll link to everything a little bit later on. Cliff, a pleasure. I'll talk to you in about 2 weeks, my friend.
All right. Thanks so much, buddy. Take care.
Cliff Schechter, kind enough to join us today. We'll take a break. Come on back. Wrap up hour one when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. It's not just the federal level here. I mean, and I want to try to get into Ohio a little bit with Cliff, but I mean, we didn't really have time. So I'll just focus on Minnesota. Let's make sure we understand something. If the Republicans take the Minnesota House, if the Republicans take the Minnesota Senate, even if it's by one seat, and they take the governor's office, let me make sure you understand what's about to happen in the state of Minnesota. One, you will have they'll make abortion illegal. They will. Immediately. That will be there. They'll immediately do this and then imply that they had nothing to do with it in the 2024 election. Two, they're going to get rid of public schools. They're going to get rid of public schools. They're going to basically say that charter schools can come in and their payrolls are more important than making sure people get a quality public education. I want to make sure we understand something. Public education actually is a better education than charter schools. They do the testing every year. It's not even close. And sure, there's one or two charter schools that are good, but the reality is the vast majority are far subpar than the public school system. They'll get rid of the public school system. Your kid will end up having to pay to go to a school that will actually give them a worse education. The mining, oh my God, they will green light every mine they can in the boundary waters, near the boundary waters, on the North Shore, near any place they can. They will gleefully do this. They will do all these things. That will happen in Minnesota. They will basically put in mandatory minimums for all crimes for black people, let's be honest. They'll basically change the rules of voting in the state to try to make it far more difficult for minorities to vote here. There is a lot on the line in this upcoming election. Stop having a pity party, Democrats. Stop listening to the mainstream media. Joe Biden's done a hell of a job. Governor Walz has done a hell of a job. The DFL has done a hell of a job. It's time to get out there and fight and show up to the polls. Once again, hour two up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Hour two on your Monday. Good to be with you. Cliff Schechter, spotlighted. We'll be out there on the SoundCloud page before too long. Democrat of the day a little bit later on. 56A, it's Jessica Hansen. She's going to join us and talk about last session, upcoming session, and her re-election campaign. This next segment, let's call it, Let's Freeze Some Hondurans. what's the coldest event, Patrick, you've ever been at? What's the coldest thing that you've ever gone out there and actually done?
Oh, let's see. This actually isn't going to be a super long list. Probably I went to a Packers game at Lambeau in November, December a couple of times.
That's not, was it really cold, though? I mean, it was like I went to in St. Louis Park. They used to do a New Year's Eve thing for kids, which was spectacular. They had horse rides. They had a big bonfire. They had the ice. They had some sledding. And we went out there one New Year's, and it was brutal. I'm going to guess it was about 1 or 2 degrees, and we were outside for a while. Now, granted, they did have the bonfires, and those were fantastic. Had a little hot chocolate. But when you went on, like, the horse ride, you went to the other side of the park, it was so cold because it was, like, this little gully area. So you went down there. There was no wind. It just kind of holding there. Oh, gosh, was that cold. But we did that with the kids, and we had fun, but it was still really cold. I've been ice fishing a few times out in the lakes up north, but usually I'm relatively protected. It's not like – I'm not old school. I'm not one of those old school guys who got a bucket out there and a heavy-duty outfit. So I'm good there. Are you going to the game here at Allianz coming up here on Wednesday night, the United States versus Honduras?
As of right now, I'm actually booked Wednesday night with an indoor event.
Well, you're not. What are you doing? Come on, it's Minnesota. We like it here. Wednesday's weather forecast for St. Paul calls for partly sunny skies, a high of 8 degrees, and northwest winds from 8 miles an hour. That night, the cloudy, the temperature drops to -7. Ooh, you better not wear your shorts, dude. Such conditions could reach extreme conditions under safety guidelines of U.S. soccer published in 2015 that black alert level recommends cancellation or rescheduling indoors because of frostbite threat. Nonetheless, the U.S. soccer spokesperson on Monday said there is no plans to adjust the U.S. men's national team's scheduled World Cup qualifier against Honduras outdoors at Allianz. Kickoff 6:30 p.m. Bundle up. Wow, that is going to be cold. An underground heating system warms the grass field to at least what's the temperature? At least 55 degrees. Yeah, 55 degrees, which is designed to keep the field playable. I gotta imagine that resin radiates some heat upwards, so it's probably gonna be relatively warm, at least for what, 4 or 5 feet off the ground. So yeah. There's nothing worse than playing on a frozen pitch, said Minnesota United veteran Will Trapp, a former U.S. men's national team member who played in the cold for the MLS Columbus team, but not Minnesota cold. The U.S. team is playing both its home games in the three-game World Cup qualifying window in northern cities, seeking a home country advantage against tropical opponents El Salvador, Colombia, in Columbus, and Honduras in St. Paul. Good luck on this. This is going to be, it is going to be just a smidge brisk out there. Well, first of all, can I say this? I do not have too much sympathy for these people. And the reason why is, does anyone really complain when we have to go down into one of these tropical climates and play a game at 90 degrees with 94% freaking humidity?
Oh, they say we can't handle it because we're not used to it.
Oh, this is nothing. This is easy to play in. That's what they say. I can't remember the last time they canceled a game because of heat. You play against the United States and Canada. And as a matter of fact, the United States lost to Canada. They played in Hamilton outdoors, which is their prerogative. That's Canada. It's not like we're going to clump all the games in the middle of the warmest time just in warm cities just to make you comfortable. I will say this. If they play this game and the U.S. loses to Honduras, you guys got to hang your head in shame. The Sunday road game against Canada played on artificial turf in Hamilton was sandwiched between the U.S. two home games. The temperature then was 31 degrees for El Salvador, 26 in Canada. Oh, but it's going to be just a smidge more brisk here. Honduras played its first two games of its current three-game window at home in Central America, losing to Canada and El Salvador, each 2-0 with temperatures in the mid to upper 70s. Oh, eliminated with Sunday's loss from qualifying for the FIFA World Cup in Qatar. Honduras is traveling all day Monday. We'll arrive in Minnesota at 9 p.m. Good luck, guys. Good luck. Like I said, let's freeze some Hondurans. Where is that line of home field advantage? It's just, you are you saying that you can't play a game in New York City or Boston or Denver because it might be too cold for you guys? Well, like I said, you guys never go out of your way to try to reschedule games when it's 90 degrees and 94% humidity.
Actually, they'll deliberately play those games in the middle of the afternoon, too.
Yeah, they will. They absolutely will to try to get an advantage. So, no, I don't have any problem with this. Let's just call it. The Honduran contingent's going to show up. And bless you. Bless you all. Welcome to Minneapolis, St. Paul. Come on in. The weather's fine. They're going to hate the city afterwards, I imagine, but we'll roll out the red carpet for you, frozen red carpet, and get you on in here. But if the field is warm to 55 degrees, the air 4 or 5 feet above the field is going to be 30 or so. I can't see why you should reschedule this. Now, once again, you might want to play with the pants underneath the shorts. Just a suggestion. And if you start not feeling appendages, I know you're not supposed to use your hands, but if it starts getting tingly, go to the sidelines. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Minnesota coronavirus update. Let's get into this. Monday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 12,098 newly reported cases, 20 newly reported deaths. The state's COVID-19 death toll is now 11,411. Now, I should mention this. Today's update includes case data that was reported at a 24-hour period ending at 4 a.m. Friday. Data from the weekend will be included in the Tuesday update. Due to the Omicron surge overload of the Health Department of Health, there remains approximately 7,000 more positive tests that are yet to be processed and included in the daily reports. All right. Now, what I'm about to say is somewhat positive because all the numbers are starting to go in the right direction. Now, I want to make sure before anyone comes out here and says, "You see what I mean? You didn't have to get vaxxed. You didn't have to wear a mask. you're fine. No. This probably wouldn't have been nearly as bad as everyone got vaxxed and everyone was wearing a mask. Let's be honest. I mean, there's zero doubt in my mind. This would have been a lot less severe if people actually cared about their fellow man as opposed to their selfish, self-centered needs. We used to care about, we used to sit there and say, my religious faith tells me I need to care for others. Now it's like, screw my religion, even though I'm going to claim I'm religious. I basically am in it for myself. Where's my cheap chimichanga? I want to eat it in the restaurant for some reason. For some reason. I don't get it. I just don't get it. But they're like, I made this point. I said, without a doubt, in like 5 years when we're all past this, hopefully we're past this, without a doubt in my mind, the same people that fought every common sense, decent social safety program involved with coronavirus are going to be the ones who sit there and insist, I sacrificed so much for the betterment of everybody else. Nope. The social media lives forever, people. And yeah. You might be ashamed of your behavior eventually. You might be able to sit there and say to yourself, well, I wish I hadn't been so self-centered. But you just own it. Just accept it. Don't try to paint yourself off as something noble or righteous at the end of the day. Minnesota's test positivity rate is on a 7-day rolling average through January 18th, was 22.3%, having been as high as 23.7. Actually, I'm pretty sure it was 23.9 one day, but anyway, 22.3, that's actually down as well. That was at 22.5. Once again, still god-awful high. You're still pretty close to one out of every four people coming that gets tested being sick, but it's coming down. Through January 28th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 1,455. Once again, down dramatically from 1,502 reported on January 27th. Of those hospitalized, 208 people are in intensive care, down from 213. 1,247 are in non-ICU care. That's down from 1,289. The latest hospital capacity data shows there are 58 staffed ICU beds available in the entire state. That's up from 44 on January 27th. And 17 pediatric ICU beds available, which is up from 16 on January 27th. As of January 27th, the state reported that 3,838,711 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, while the 3,594,164 people have completed the vaccine series. The state has administered 2,030,586 third dose booster shots. Total number of people infected in the state of Minnesota with coronavirus, 1,321,753. Wow. More than a year after a bout with COVID-19, Rebecca Hogan still suffers from severe brain fog, pain and fatigue that leave her unable to do nursing job or handle household activities. More than a year after a bout with COVID-19. Long COVID has her questioning her worth as a wife and a mother. Is this permanent? Is this the new norm? Said the 41-year-old Latham, New York woman, whose three children and husband have also signs of the condition, I want my life back. More than a third of COVID-19 survivors, by some estimates, will develop such lingering problems. Now, with Omicron sweeping across the globe, scientists are racing to pinpoint the cause of the bedeviling condition and find treatments before a potential explosion of long COVID cases. Could it be an autoimmune disorder? That could help explain why long COVID disproportionately affects women who are more likely than men to develop autoimmune diseases. Could microclots be the cause of the symptoms ranging from memory lapses to discolored toes? I've never heard of that one before. That could make sense since abnormal blood clotting can occur in COVID-19. As these theories and others are tested, there is fresh evidence that vaccination may reduce the chances of developing long COVID. Momentum is building around a few key theories. One is that the infection or remnants of the virus persist past the initial illness, triggering inflammation that leads to long COVID. Another is that latent viruses in the body, such as Epstein-Barr virus that causes mononucleosis, are reactivated. A recent study of the journal Cell pointed to Epstein-Barr as the blood of in the blood of one of four possible risk factors, which also include pre-existing type 2 diabetes and the levels of coronavirus RNA and certain antibodies in the blood. Those findings must be confirmed with more research. A third theory is that autoimmune response development after acute COVID-19. In a normal immune response, COVID viral infections activate antibodies that fight invading viruses, proteins, but sometimes in the aftermath, antibodies remain revved up and mistakenly attack normal cells. The phenomenon is thought to play a role in the autoimmune diseases such as lupus and multiple sclerosis. So, I know people that have got long COVID that had COVID for like 3 months. And here we are 6 months later after they are supposedly were clear and they still cannot get back to work. The brain fog thing seems like it's pretty consistent, that it's just it's very hard for some people because all of a sudden they just have to stop because they cannot focus. And to a point, I mean, you hope their people are working from home so that they don't have to drive home with the brain fog and stuff. No, this is – I have said numerous times the following three things. I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. And I don't want you bankrupt for the rest of your life. I have said those things. I stand by those things. I don't care if you've got an R next to your name. I don't want you sick. I don't want you dead. And I don't want you bankrupt. Absolutely not. Occasionally, I've added on, and maybe I should just start adding it on, I don't want you sick for the next 5 years or for the rest of your life. We don't know that much about COVID. We've got scientists who are trying their hardest to understand this, while idiots out there scream, it's ivermectin, get the ivermectin, it's the horse dewormer, and drop your pants. The reality is that it's you're going to have in this country, by what I've seen, and this is just a pure speculation guesstimate, 30 to 50,000 people with long COVID for as long as this is going to run, whether that's a year, 2 years, the rest of their life. I don't know. But you're going to have a significant amount of people suffering long-term consequences because of COVID. Now, once again, here we go back to the other thing I've been saying. I've been saying as long as the other one, the I don't want you sick, I don't want you dead, and I don't want you bankrupt. But I've been saying it for a while. Your mild inconveniences should not override preventing needless suffering and death. It shouldn't. Your desire to go to a Applebee's and feeling good in the neighborhood and not having to wear a mask and not having to look out for your fellow man, that should not override trying to prevent needless suffering in our society. I understand there's a lot of people, especially a lot of people on the right, that have the mentality of, it sucks to be you! And of course, the second those people get sick, it's, why isn't everybody doing everything to help me? Selfishness. You're selfish. If you're not willing to do what it takes to make the sacrifices that we need to make so that we can be safer and prevent people from getting sick and prevent people from dying, well, you're selfish. And we are only the next serious variant of COVID away from selfishness possibly wiping out a large portion of the population. You need to be careful out there. Get vaccinated, wear a mask, social distance. When this is all over, we can all say, boy, thank God we're done with that. But we won't ever get there as long as their selfishness is the main ideology that is practiced within half this country. We just will not get there. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. More on the Minnesota coronavirus update when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. More on the Minnesota coronavirus update. I should mention once again, Democrat of the day is going to be Representative Jess Hansen, District 56A. She'll be joining us here in just a little bit. A Hennepin County judge denied a request from a group of Minneapolis restaurant and bar owners for the court to temporarily halt enforcement of the city's new requirement that customers now show proof of COVID-19 vaccination or a recent negative test. In a ruling filed in Friday, Judge Lori Miller rejected the claim of the seven business owners that a requirement would be so economically devastating that it must be immediately blocked as their lawsuit proceeds. The economic harm feared by plaintiffs does not outweigh the city's documented public health concerns, Miller wrote. The court recognizes that the pandemic has been a devastating economic impact on bars and restaurants, but the city cannot be held responsible for general pandemic-related business losses. I got to tell you the truth. This is actually an amazingly well-written judgment on why that she didn't allow a stay to happen in this ruling. Because, once again, it's the city is looking out for the best of the health care, but you can't really dictate where this is. I mean, are you really seeing a dramatic decrease in people going out to your restaurants or your bars because they have to show a vaccine card or proof of a negative test to get in? Are you? Or are you just seeing a regular, because of COVID, downturn in customers? Once again, doesn't mean any of this is great. Nope, it sucks. It sucks across the board. It sucks huge. And that's what it does. I'm not sitting here saying everyone should have a smile on their face for this, for goodness sakes, no. But we used to care about trying to prevent needless suffering as opposed to money. The judge called the business owner's claims a lost revenue because of the requirement speculative. Perhaps some patrons are staying away because they fear a rapid spread of Omicron variant. Perhaps some patrons are staying home due to the weather. Perhaps some patrons have chosen to stay away from plaintiff's establishment solely due to their desire to avoid having or to comply with requirement that has not been shown on the record before the court. So basically what she's saying is that you haven't been able to prove to me that it was distinctly the requirement to show the vaccine status that was causing people not to go in there. Miller also stated she does not believe the business owners will ultimately succeed in their lawsuit, in which they argue Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey overstepped his legal authority in instituting a requirement that there is no longer a COVID-19 emergency. The lawsuit was filed by the owners of the Gay 90s, Sneaky Pete's, Smack Shack, Urban Forage, Wild Greg's Saloon, a Jimmy John's franchise, and Bunker Hill Music and Grill, who said the requirement is a misuse of mayoral power and puts an unfair burden on them. Minneapolis bars and restaurants are being used as pawns to further Mayor Frey's agenda for pushing for and convincing the people to get vaccinated. Well, if it's the safest thing to do, yeah. Your agenda by having us live a healthy and long life. How dare you? Whether end being sought is noble, the scheme is forcing restaurants and bars to lose additional patrons and business. You've convinced yourself that that's the only thing that's happening, and the judge is basically saying you can't say that that's for sure. And you haven't brought any by the way I read the ruling here by the judge, it's not like you brought any kind of evidence at all to say this outside of the theory that this is what was causing you to lose people. I mean, she brings up the point, the weather. I'll bring up the point, last two weekends, I've gone out, my time outside was not necessarily to go to a bar or restaurant in Minneapolis, but to go to the Kite Festival, went to the Winter Carnival. There are things going on out there. Hanging out with Klondike Kate. Hello, Kate. Hi. How you doing? Good to see you. No, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why people might not be going to your establishment. And once again, no one is trying to put forward the idea that this is convenient or good. But once again, the betterment of all of us should outweigh whether or not you're going to make as much money as usual on two-for-one rail drinks. There's a friend of mine. I won't say who it was. There's a friend of mine who owns a restaurant here in town, and they were one of these people that was completely and totally against any kind of mask mandate or vaccination mandate or anything like that. Was just against it, just sort of saying, you know, let people choose. Let people choose. He goes, we'll move the tables away from each other and stuff, but let people choose. And he got COVID. And his wife got COVID, and their kid got COVID, and I think one of their parents got COVID. And it was touch and go for one of them for a while. And now he's out there, and he's the complete opposite. He's like, you know what? If I got a mask mandate up. I'm not going to get in the way of that. I want people to be safe, because this is not something you want to mess around with. No one is saying this is good. That is the argument of the people that want to strike this down, that there's someone in a room going, ooh, we got him. We got him. Yay. No, no one's doing that. These are tough decisions that have to be made to try to save as many people as possible. If you're trying to get me on the side of being less safe, then it's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. When we do return, Democrat of the Day, Representative Jess Hansen. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Our Democrat of the day represents most of Savage, I think all of Savage, actually, and parts of Burnsville. It's District 56A. Representative Jessica Hansen is joining us to talk about the last year or the upcoming year and her campaign. Representative, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for the time. Is this your first day over in St. Paul today?
It was. Today was the big day. We kicked session off, and it was a full house, and we are ready to get to work.
Let's talk a little bit about, since this is going to be your re-election campaign, let's talk about the little bit last year first. The Minnesota House is obviously a little bit more friendly to the DFL than the Minnesota Senate. What were some of the things that you were happy to be able to work on last year that were able to get accomplished?
You know, some of the things that I saw as huge wins were our Health and Human Services package. We made record investments in education, continuing to look at our systemic issues, whether it be homelessness, other inequities that we're seeing in communities, and that we can continue to fight for working families. And those are the feats that we're going to continue to put forward in this session as well.
I was going to talk about this upcoming year here. It's this upcoming session as we are starting it off. Is that really kind of the top of your to-do list today?
Yeah, I mean, we really want to make sure that we're fighting for the economic security that everybody deserves and making sure that Minnesota is the best place in the country to live, work, raise a family, and that we're making sure everyone feels safe in their communities, has access to the resources they need after the pandemic has shined a light on so many things that we know have hurt families. We have to really look at what's happening on Main Street to make sure we can get this right up in St. Paul.
Well, what is in your thought is then on the approach on this? What would you like to, you know, there some places are being very aggressive with guaranteed income levels and stuff like that. Others, obviously, the fight for a better minimum wage or just better wages overall, more benefits for the workers. What are some of the things that you actually want to tangible things that you want to try to accomplish?
Yeah, some of the big things we have to talk about paid family and medical leave. I mean, that is clearly something that families are looking for and needing and are in support of. Earn sick and safe time. You know, these are protections a lot of folks don't have. We've got frontline workers who have been out there on the front lines doing this work with, you know, putting their lives at risk. And so making sure that we're reimbursing that and looking at the risks that they've taken. And then all the way down to like unemployment insurance and more. We have to continue to talk to folks who have been most impacted by this, because there's some people who did really well during the pandemic and more of us who didn't. Mm-hmm. And so that's got to be who we continue to fight for, is, you know, the people who are going to work every day and just want to see their kids have a good education and continue to live in what we feel like is the greatest state in the country.
You know, Representative, it's interesting you bring up the frontline worker stuff, because the Senate's been very clear that they don't want to, A, increase that money allotment or make it available for anyone outside of a handful of right. people in the medical industry. And bless the people in the medical industry. They are brilliant. They have been working really hard. But I remember in March of 2020, a lot of Republicans putting out signs saying, we love you frontline workers, such as the people who are driving buses, working in grocery stores. There was a lot, child care workers, teachers. There was a lot of people there that were asked to go in a pandemic when we didn't know that much about it, when we did not have a vaccine, and get on the front lines and help out. They deserve to get some relief, too. And the Republicans are in the Senate, at least, are adamant that, no, we're not going to help the people. They themselves demanded get back to work.
Right. And if they support frontline workers, I hope they act like it. You know, I think that's the biggest piece here is, right, we're all yeah. called to represent the will of the people. And if the people are calling on us to support those folks and to do that, my dad's a frontline worker, my mom's a frontline worker, my daughter is a frontline worker. You know, we have all had sacrifices out there when we don't know that all the places people are going are taking the necessary precautions. It's been a big question mark. We know more about it now than we have in the past, certainly, mm-hmm. And we're learning to adapt and grow and whatnot. But that doesn't mean we just leave the folks behind who took the biggest risks in the beginning. You know, I came from a very lower class growing up. My parents worked every single day really, really hard and still struggled to make ends meet. And I just don't think we should still continue to put families in those positions. You know, there's folks who are living paycheck to paycheck and less, and they're out there risking, you know, their health and their safety. We don't know the long-term effects, you know, until COVID's been around for a lot longer than it has been. Mm-hmm. So there's just so many unknowns. My goal is always that we have to operate from what's the common good. What is best for everybody, so we can make sure we're making decisions that are in the interest of safety. And not, you know, rather be safe than sorry, in my opinion.
And you bring it because, I mean, you're a mom with two kids. You live in the suburbs. I mean, your perspective mm-hmm. on this is the absolute right person we should have in St. Paul having these discussions. And it is kind of remarkable that, you know, considering that, oh, yeah, you represent the people, especially the people the Republicans claim to want to try to help. But the reality is they're not putting the help out there that the people like yourself, like your constituents need. They just do not want to help them outside of tax breaks for a handful of wealthy.
And I hope that this session we can have those hard conversations and do what Minnesotans deserve, because that's what we were all elected to do. We were elected to serve the people that sent us there and serve their best interests and be a responsible government. And that's what I'm always fighting for, is finding the things that we agree on to make sure we can get things done, because Minnesotans deserve that more than anything else.
I'm saying this, not you. That's why the DFL is there. Anyway, I love Speaker Hortman. I love Governor Walz. I love the Republicans. I love the fact that the Democrats basically in the House are able to stifle this very aggressive far right agenda from the Republicans. And I do love the Senate DFLers, but it is sometimes just mind numbing what you have to run up against. I mean, I remember in the Senate last year. Now I know you're the House, but I know the Senate last year, they were just trying to get them to say, yeah, let's not have white supremacy cops, and the Republicans are like, no, we're going to have those. Right. And you're like, really? Right. This is where you people
and
are still
blatant at? Blatant shows of white supremacy on the floor. You know, we have to acknowledge some of those things that are happening, and I think that that's the reason why we need to keep at the forefront of our work the idea that there have been a lot of wrongs done, and we can do better going forward, and we just have to, you know, be ready to do that. So we're going to continue to fight for, you know, different equity platforms, you know, areas where we're seeing people struggle the most. And I hope that Minnesotans continue to talk to their legislators, fill them in on what they want. We work for them, and it's up to them to hold us accountable for those things. And so I hope everyone is engaged this year. We say every election is the election of our lives for a reason, because yes. This is what happens for the next 10 years after redistricting here. That'll be your representative, and it's important to have good relationships and to hold them accountable for what you need.
Let's talk about some of the committees you're on really quick. Higher education, obviously, it's interesting. I've got a son who's at the U. And it is interesting. We this is not an issue that's getting a lot of traction. We talk about it financially with the budgets and stuff. Is there anything particular the House Higher Education Finance Policy Committee is going to be looking at in regards to higher education this upcoming cycle?
Yeah, I mean, continuing to make sure we're supporting all paths to higher education, whether that be a formal four-year private private universities, make sure grants are there. Otherwise, it's also talking about the trades and making sure that folks have pathways into trade programs as well. I, in particular, I do a lot of work around mental health work, and so making sure we're bolstering up our workforce to continue to have a great mental health crisis response team in this state and other licensed mental health practitioners, finding ways to help some of the folks who want to go into that workforce. It's a hard career, but we definitely need a lot more of those folks in the field. And there's going to be a lot of conversations about what types of jobs we need more of right now. And you will find me on the side of fighting to make sure our communities get the resources they're asking for, which is mental health support. It's support, with wraparound services and other things like that. And so making sure that our higher education process kind of reflects that workforce we're hoping to create. And also remembering that, knowledge is power, and making sure we're empowering our kids to have opportunities to seek education, or folks that maybe didn't go to college. I did not go to college right after high school. I went when I was 25 with two young kids, and I'm a first-generation college graduate. And so it's really important to me that we protect the access to an affordable education, because no one should come out of college with the kind of debt that I had to leave with.
Amen. Yes.
Because it wasn't affordable for me. It wasn't affordable for my family. That wasn't a pathway. Loans and grants were my option. And I got a great education, and I'm grateful that I did that. But it's very heavy to have $800 a month, due for student loans once this, what the feds figure out what they're doing.
You are, I believe, our first Democrat of the day that serves on any, either House or Senate, the Ag Committee, the Agricultural yes. Finance and Policy Committee. I mean, obviously, it's kind of one of those things we can't, with the divisiveness in our country today and in our state, it is generally rural areas that are very Republican. This is something that affects them. But I've always said this, the ag policy that we put forward, that's the foundation. The ag is the foundation of an economy in this state, and we have to make sure we have good policies. Are there some things that the House Ag Committee is looking at coming for this upcoming session?
Yeah, I mean, we have to continue to, look at soil health as an ag issue. I think that's going to be a continued conversation I have, because we have to reinvest in our soil just like we reinvest in a lot of other things. And so continuing to have those important conversations is something I'm tuning into. I think also supporting, our emerging farmers. We have an emerging farmers working group, which we appropriated some money to last year to make some recommendations. They're doing amazing work, so I'm very excited to continue to hear from them. And we have some new industries. I think everybody who knows me knows that I talk a lot about cannabis and a lot about kind of hemp and what that can do for new industry and new jobs and new revenue streams for the state. And so continuing to look at those options as well. And I think the other big thing I'm going to be watching is we know that hunger has become more of an issue. We lost decades of work in the fight against hunger through the COVID-19 pandemic, and we still continue to fight that. And so continuing to find the gaps in that food sourcing, making sure our food banks are well supported, and that we're raising the awareness that there are too many Minnesotans who are still hungry. And that is not where I think we all agree we should be as a state, is that we should be able to tackle hunger and make sure everyone's got access to a good meal, especially the kids who are, most disproportionately impacted by that.
You brought up cannabis. I'm going to ask you here really quick. I mean, do you feel as if we can get legalized cannabis, legalized marijuana in the state of Minnesota? Already Miller in the Senate has said that's a no-go, that his caucus is 100% against it.
Before I got elected, I was the executive director of an organization. We organized about 10,000 Minnesotans from all sorts of political ideologies and backgrounds. And from what I say to that is, again, our job is to represent the will of the people.
Yes.
Minnesotans want this. You can go into any comment section on any Care 11 article or any other news, big news article that's covering you know, that the governor put this in his budget, so on and so forth. The comment sections are very indicative of what Minnesotans are looking for. You know, when Minnesotans are torn on something, you'll see that in our comment sections on, you know, different places. In this, on this issue, Minnesotans are united. They would like to see an end to prohibition. One, because it's a prolific racist system that is continuing to be very alive and well, that we can and should do something about. And also because it is a healing plant with no lethal dose that Minnesotans would like to have safe, responsible, legal access to. We have revenue capacity. We have, you know, new businesses that can come here, and we're missing out. You know, the rest of the country is shifting on this, and we are not. And so I hope that the Senate Republicans continue to listen to constituents. I understand where they're at with, you know, deciding if it's a platform issue, but I encourage them to talk to their voters, because I have talked to their voters, and from what I've heard, they are looking for this. There is a fear argument if we don't know what will happen, and I understand that. That's fair. Let's have that conversation, though, and let's see what they found in other states, rather than just throwing the baby out with the bathwater, because this is going to be a big deal going forward. We have two major parties that got major party status over an issue campaign. To continue to say it is not a key issue for Minnesota voters, I think is missing the point, in my opinion.
It passed on a ballot initiative in South Dakota before the Republicans tried to shut it down over there. You know, it's not exactly, you know, as you say. I mean, this is not a blue or red district thing. This is, people want this,
no.
And the Republicans are basically the ones that are standing in the way. So let me talk about your district specifically, 56A. Like I said, just south of the river, there's Savage, Burnsville. What is one issue you want to champion this upcoming cycle for your district specifically?
You know, we've got one of the most the busiest highways here from the ports of Savage, and there's a lot of work that needs to be done to continue to make sure that those intersections are safe and efficient for us to continue to get goods out to Minnesotans, and for us to continue to address some of the congestion that's on that corridor and some of the pollution that goes along with it.
Amen.
And so that's going to be some big issues to work on those. You know, my local school district is looking to, sell a property that's really important to them, so I'm really pushing for that. We're also going to continue to work on, you know, we have several landfills right across the street from my district, which my community is directly impacted by, that, you know, the entire state has been using since the 70s, so continuing to look at that. We have a moratorium on a rail line down here called the Dam Patch Rail Line that is an old moratorium that's in place that prohibits us from studying it or investing any money there. So I'm seeking to overturn that this year so we can continue to advance and breathe some life back into that rail line again. And so folks could maybe one day take a train from down here south of the river all the way up to the cities as well and back and forth and bring folks here too. But other than that, you know, my community is looking for a responsible government that does what's best for the people. And so as the issues come up, that's where my alliances are always going to land, making sure I'm fighting for the youth in my district who have been having extreme challenges in schools with a variety of issues, and then continuing to support, you know, our local government staff who are just working so, so hard with fewer and fewer resources, and so continuing to help them really get a leg up, if you will, from being down for so long from the pandemic. You know, some of these folks who've been just working, you know, day in and day out and need more staff, you know, those are some of the programs we want to make sure we invest in.
We have, of course, Jess Hansen here, once again, District 56A. It's one of those districts where it's not out of line that a Republican could win this district. We also have redistricting come up. We've got to make sure we hold this seat. 56A, we need to stay with the DFL, stay with Jess Hansen. It's Jess Hansen, O-N, for everyone out there,
forhouse.com.
Jess Hansen, forhouse.com. That's where they can find out the information on how they can donate and volunteer, correct?
Yep, and that's where you learn about what does it mean to live in a world where politics is how we care about each other. That's the kind of campaign I run. That's the kind of politician I am, is really making sure we're community-centered and that I'm amplifying the voices of folks who need things to get done in St. Paul. So I'm happy to be out there speaking the truth and doing what I can to fight for the communities that, you know, maybe haven't had a voice, you know, as loud there before. We want to really embody that and bring people into the campaign. So if you're looking to get involved, please volunteer. Lots of opportunities for that. We have a clue on who our competitor will be as well. So I think that's, looking forward to a good race, this year and really knocking every single door. So we'll need lots of door knockers this year, too.
And also, I should mention, your caucus tomorrow is going to be, it's going to be remote for safety reasons, right?
Yes. The all of our committee hearings will continue to be remote. There are strict safety protocols being taken on the floor with masking as well. I myself am vaxxed and boosted, so I am ready to go and feeling, you know, like my leadership is taking the right path on this to keep us as safe as possible so we can do the people's work.
All right. If you would like more information on the caucus, you can find it at her website as well. Jess Hanson, JessHanson4House.com. That's where you'll find all the information. Help out. Donate, volunteer if you can. And reminder, if you're, you might not be in her district, but if you got a caucus tomorrow, find out what you're going to be heading into tomorrow. We talked with Steve Simon on Friday about that. Representative, all my best this cycle. Thank you very much. I really appreciate the time today. And all my best to you as you go through 2022 here.
Yes, and thank you for all you do. Keep spreading the word and doing the good work. We love you.
Oh, thank you very much. Representative Jess Hanson, kind enough to join us today. Democrat of the day. We'll spotlight that for sure. We'll take a break. Come on back. Wrap up the show when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Speaking of which, Axios Twin Cities actually had a nice breakdown of this, kind of the way different things, the way the Democrats, Republicans are looking at them. As I mentioned this with Jess Hanson there as Democrat of the day. Frontline worker bonuses, House Democrats' walls proposed increasing the pot of cash for the checks from $250 million up to $1 billion so more jobs can qualify. Senate Majority Leader Jeremy Miller says Republicans don't want to do that. They want to stick with the original appropriation, only give it to a small group of people. Even though the Republicans themselves demanded people get on the front lines, they don't want to reward those people. I guess it really was only a sign, wasn't it? You matter to me. Well, not unless there's money involved. I made you a sign. That's Republicans. Unemployment insurance trust fund. Republicans and Governor Walz want to use $2.7 billion of the surplus to wipe out the debt accumulated due to high levels of claims filed during the pandemic without action. Payroll taxes will go up. Speaker Hortman says she's willing to fully replenish the fund as Republicans agree to big spending on paid family leave and frontline worker bonuses. You want that? Well, you got to bring it up. That's called government working together. The Page Amendment, the proposed constitutional amendment to guarantee a right to quality education, has sparked fierce debate. And that one's all over the place. I mean, there isn't really, from what I've seen, is it's not really anything that the individual caucuses are fighting against. Hortman says she wants to focus on legislative fixes on the issue. Miller says he hasn't closed the door, but key members of a caucus have concerns about it. So, there was that MinPo story we talked about. It's like there are some really weird bedfellows on this one. Far right people and far left people that are against it, and far right people and far left people that are for it. So I just don't think that's going to happen. I just don't think it's going to happen. Marijuana, the DFL passed a bill legalizing marijuana for people age 18 and older. But the narcs that are the Republicans in the House, in the Senate, rather, it's a no-go for him and his caucus. Narc. Narc. But sports betting. Okay, pick your vice here. Pick your vice. Oh, you can't smoke marijuana, but you can bet the house on a T-Wolves game. Miller backs legalization personally, but noted he's not sure the issue has enough supporters to pass. Hortman says put up the odds of the deal at 50%, but she thought it was pretty good. I'm not going to bet on that. Those numbers. Sorry. Let's do that. Bonding Republicans say Walz's proposal to borrow to spend a regular $2.73 billion for infrastructure and public works project is too high. The bill must originate from the House and will need bipartisan support in both chambers to pass. Details, you know, that's the ugly truth about this. The bonding bill is what keeps these guys honest because they want the bonding bill passed, but they have to get the other side on board with them. I'd say pass all the stuff that Walz wanted to do anyway, because let's face it, Republicans will just take credit for it down the line anyhow. So might as well just pass it. We'll see. Busy day tomorrow. Already three interviews. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.